We are coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Rocket Mortgage is giving away $2.5 million prizes during Super Bowl 55 that could be used to buy your dream home. So see rules and enter for free today at rocketmortgagesquares.com. Make sure you do that. So let me start you off. Hour number three, I've got Mark Stein coming up next segment. We'll talk some NBA with him. In the meantime, you should call right now. I'm getting calls, but I'm waiting for the right call. The right call, 1-800-636-8686. If you want to talk about something that I'm not talking about, do it. In fact, I really don't even care what you want to talk about. Anything is fair game. Anything is fair game. 1-800-636-8686. We have broken down the AFC Championship game. We broke down the NFC Championship game. I broke down what went down on Fight Island on Saturday night. Talked a little horse racing. Covered a lot of ground. So you've got your phone number. You can find me on Twitter at Jim Rome. Hit me up on Instagram also at Jim Rome. And then let me go off the board really quickly for something. Over the weekend, it was announced that broadcast legend Larry King had passed away in Los Angeles at the age of 87. So let me just say up front that I want to acknowledge the man had an amazing career. There is no denying that. That's why multiple tributes on television and social media poured in over the weekend and will surely continue today as the weekday talk shows get back on the air for the first time since that happened. One talk show host, though, who was not going to wait to take the air again to share his thoughts was Piers Morgan. Morgan went for the instant memorializing on Twitter, and his tweet was so profound that he actually trended on the topics list just one spot below Larry King for most of Saturday. Now, if you're unfamiliar with him, Morgan is the British TV personality who replaced Larry King in primetime on CNN back in 2010 after King had held that time slot for a couple of decades. Larry pretty much then faded to infomercials for how to take better dumps. While Piers wore out his welcome with American viewers, got canceled, moved back home across the pond. Apparently, Morgan's takeover, though, of Larry's show was not as amicable as CNN led us to believe back in the day, or the media overall. As evidenced by this tweet from Morgan just minutes after the world found out that Larry King had died. The tweet reads, and I quote, "Larry King was a hero of mine until..." Let me stop right there. Memo to my pals back in New York with a full screen. Let me stop right there. Uh-oh! We're 8 words into a tribute tweet, and we've already reached our first hard pivot, our first U-turn. This dude just dropped an "until" in the eulogy. My man's not going to skewer Larry on his death day, is he? Quote, "Larry King was a hero of mine until we fell out after I replaced him at CNN. And he said my show was like watching your mother-in-law go over a cliff in your new Bentley. Larry was married 8 times, so he's a mother-in-law expert. But he was a brilliant broadcaster and a masterful TV interviewer." End quote. Damn, Piers. Chill out, bro. A man is dead. And freshly dead as well. I mean, dude, have some class. Some dignity. Some respect. Can't believe that America didn't like you, bro. Again, this is this guy's tweet. Like, literally minutes after finding out that Larry King went toes up. In one paragraph, he reminded the world that he replaced Larry, brought up an old falling out, dragged him for being married 8 times. All of that in a tweet, right after the man died. I mean, that's an all-time tweet right there. Quote, "Larry King was a hero of mine until we fell out later after I replaced him at CNN. And he said that my show was like watching your mother-in-law go over a cliff in your new Bentley. Larry was married 8 times. So he's a mother-in-law expert, but he was a brilliant broadcaster and a masterful TV interviewer," end of quote. Man, that is an all-time tweet. an all-time tweet. And I hate to say it, but, well, there is some pretty serious comedy in there. And I don't feel good about laughing. To me, it's more of a shock laugh and not a ha-ha laugh. Like, dude went there laugh. I mean, the audacity to tweet this and then not delete it is pretty amazing in and of itself and somewhat hilarious. And you know how when famous people die, I've talked about this before, when famous people die and they're of a certain age, you ever notice how every platform already has the tribute ready to roll? Do you know why that is? Because they have the tribute ready to roll. It's already in the can. They've already produced it. They've been sitting on it, waiting for that person to die. It's almost like what Piers did. Or, I don't know, maybe he just thumbed that out off the top of his mind. But I got a feeling that thing was locked and loaded. I think that was in the draft folder, allegedly. So anyway, I got to respect the fact that he didn't delete it. Like, my man is standing by his take. And I'd say that it's hard to stand by something like that unless, in fact, the guy absolutely loves it. And then it's not hard at all. To Larry's credit, that line about watching your mother-in-law drive off a cliff in a luxury sled. Kudos, Lair. Well done, man. So Pierce kind of showed Larry some love by writing that in there. But then to call somebody a, quote, mother-in-law expert, while eulogizing them, is so inappropriate that it's impossible not to laugh. Like, oh, of course he's a mother-in-law expert. The guy has been married 8 times. It's like the guy dug up Larry's body, which was still warm, and then killed him again with divorce smack, and then buried him for a second time in the same day by calling him a, quote, mother-in-law expert. I mean, wow. I haven't heard somebody this offended by Larry's love life since Jeff from Richmond RSVP'd to the Smack Off last year.
Jim, how tired and played is it to see 86-year-old Lizard Larry King flesh on a stick, still pimping product on cable TV. Jim, my man's pimping vitamins, prostate meds, credit reporting services. Remember back in the day, Jim, when the Lizard, the hunchback of CNN, was actually considered fairly fresh and hip? You remember those days, Jim. Hey, Lizard, maybe if you spent a little less time pimping product and a little more time with your family, maybe you wouldn't have cycled through 8 marriages, Jim. That's right, 8.
Hey, Jeff, I understand that you did that while Larry was still walking above ground with the rest of us. But, dude, don't you feel badly about that? How you did him. I mean, damn. Jeff from Richmond and Piers Morgan are out here just scoreboarding Larry's nuptials. Their words, not mine. And even Larry and I had issues back in the day. You never heard me do anything like that. And in terms of Morgan and that tweet, is it insensitive and inappropriate and tone deaf? I mean, I would say yes, because the man had just passed. But I will say this. In defense of Morgan, and I still wouldn't have thumbed out that tweet, but in defense of Morgan, he experienced what a lot of others have experienced as well, and that is being hated and disrespected by the person or the people that you pass up. A lot of you listening and watching can relate to that. I know I can. I remember how it was. I can remember when I first came up. I can remember when I first got into the business. I can remember when people that used to put me on TV or put me on the radio got a huge kick out of me. Hey, Rome, man, that kid's something else. Until I blew by them. And then the knives came out, man. Then the knives came out. Then they were sharpening their knives and MFing me every chance they could. And then whenever came over the table, man, that was the best day of their lives. So I understand, like, part of me understands where Morgan's coming from, man. Some stuff must have gone down. He must have felt like the old man had his knife out. He must have felt like that old guy was M-bleeping him. There must have been something. And again, it's not just me and him. A lot of you listening and watching and hearing this know exactly what I'm talking about. Spoiler alert. Oftentimes, the only people truly happy for your success are your very best friends and your family. You don't even have to be in show business to relate to that. If you've passed anybody in your career or your earnings or on the sales board or in general life, you know that some of the people you thought were your friends are wishing the worst for you behind your back or even to your face, which you respect more because it's to your face. Like, Larry and I had a little history, and no, it was not great. But it's not about that. It's about him and being respectful. And I'll say it for the record. I mean, the man was very, very accomplished as anybody for a long, long time in this business. I've got to tip my hat to his success. Even if Tommy Lasorda, RIP, did choose my show over his show back in the day.
If that's what they say, then you go ahead and write it.
Right.
Because I had not made a decision. So nobody knows. Nobody could have said anything with real proof. You see what I mean, Jim?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Tommy. That would really rock everybody's world. That was a hell of a tribute to you.
Rick Bell operator, have an emergency call. 870-4894 from Larry King Live. Do you want to release?
Who's it from?
Larry King Live.
No, I can't. Tell him to call me back.
Thank you.
Tell him to call me back now. I'm not doing that. That was back in the day. That was so old that we don't even have a year for it. I don't even know what year that was. There's no time stamp on that one. That was so old that there was such a thing still as the emergency breakthrough. An emergency breakthrough. And because I've told the story before many times, I'll give you the very, very short version. And I do this out of respect to Larry King. Like, there are some beefs I've had over the years that are not my fault. I mean, the beefs are beefs, right? Like, you can be minding your own business and doing nothing at all, and then somebody will drive by and start something. So beefs are beefs. There are people that hate my guts that, based on what I've said on this show, should love me. And there are people who love me who, frankly, should hate my guts. So beefs are beefs. Some of these things are, quote, my fault because I threw the first punch. And some of them, I was just minding my own business. I'm going to say with me and Larry King, I probably started that. Thinking back on the day, I probably was critical of him for his dot, dot, dot columns. Remember those columns? Dot, dot, dot. The sky is blue. Dot, dot, dot. Water is wet. Dot, dot, dot. Anyway, maybe that was on me. Maybe. I don't remember. I don't remember. But there was beef back in the day. And I do remember, man, it was so funny. What I would give to have this on videotape that you could actually see it. It was so stupid. It was hilarious. But back in the day, when I lived in the 818, Janet and I used to go to Mr. Chow's. That was our thing, our favorite thing to do. That was the event, man. Friday night, get in the car, get on the 405 or the 101, hit the 405, go over the hill, go to Mr. Chow's because it was the best spot in Beverly Hills, and you never know who you might see. Except there's a good chance you'd see Larry King posted up in table number one. Always had that good table. Always the early table, too. So Janet and I go in there one night, and he's there, and I'm there, and we don't like each other, and it's clear. We know it. It's just a fact. So I probably have a cocktail in me. I don't know what his deal was. And we're just staring at each other. Just glaring at each other. Not wanting to look away. Like, really mature stuff. Really mature stuff. And I'm just looking at him, and he's looking at me. And there's beef. And because he starts early, he's done. And he's with some guys who, I gotta admit, they're pretty intimidating dudes, the guys he's with. He's sitting with some pretty intimidating dudes. Like, guys I'm looking at, like, I probably don't want to mess with them. Like, the old guy didn't concern me, but the guys he was with did a little bit. I'm not going to lie. One of them walks over to me, and he goes, "Yo, Rome." And I'm like, "Oh, man, are we going to have an issue in a restaurant?" He looks at me, and then he smiles and kind of disarms me, and he goes, "I got to tell you something, kid." I said, "Yes." He goes, "I got to tell you something, kid." He goes, "Me and the fellas?" He goes, "Man, we love you. We think you're hilarious, kid." He goes, "Now, the old man, he hates your guts. He hates you." He goes, "But me and the boys, we think you're funny." I said, "I appreciate that, sir. Appreciate that. Thanks for not breaking my arm." So that was our moment in the restaurant. But I say this respectfully, man. This guy, I'll tell you what. If I'm 87 and somebody wants to put me on the air to, quote, push content or prostate products, I might. We'll see. I especially might if I had eight wives. Anyway, Larry, RIP, my man. Let's bury the hatchet. Not like they buried you. Just kidding. He's got a great run, man. He's got a great run. I hope to have a run like that. I hope I'm still going strong and doing my thing. It's my eighth decade. Piers, ease up, dude. And like I say, I've been there before. I know what it's like to work with people and have them act like they love you, man. They love you until you go by them and then the knives come out. I get that. But come on, man. They just put him down. Respect. Pay some respects. R.I.P., Larry. R.I.P., you had an amazing career. Rest in peace. Boy, there's been a lot of people passing lately. Legends, icons, Hall of Famers. So I'll take a moment. All right, when we come back, Mark Stein joins me. Talk some basketball with him. I'm curious, what's the vibe in Wisconsin? I know it's cold, but what's the vibe in Wisconsin after a tough loss like that? Somebody hit me up. 1-800-636-8686. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
All right, moving right along. Welcome back. It's going to be a really, really busy couple of weeks leading up to the Super Bowl, and in a really good way, too. If you're on hold, stay there. We're joined right now by somebody who covers the NBA for the New York Times. He is a Cal State Fullerton and Big West Conference legend. He is the man behind the New York Times NBA newsletter. He is a 2019 Kurt Gowdy Media Award recipient, friend of the program, member of the Buffalo Bills Mafia. He is Mark Stein. Mark, what's going on? How are you?
I'm good, sir. I'm good.
No, I think I know what you mean. I think I know exactly what you mean by a response like that, so let me rephrase the question. Before we talk basketball, let me ask you, as a Bills fan, how are you feeling today, Mark?
I'm not shocked. I think realistically everybody knew the Chiefs were a big favorite in that game. And look, if I'm being as candid as I can, I lived in the Buffalo area basically from ages 2 to 9. All my sporting allegiances were formed then, but I am in truth a much bigger Sabres fan than a Bills fan, and it's really my 14-year-old son, Aaron, who brought me back to the Bills this year because he, on his own, without me even pushing him, loves Josh Allen, became a Bills fan. So this season in our house, every Sunday the Bills were on, and it was the first time really in my fatherhood that it was like that. So I definitely got back into it this year. But like I said, I am no NFL expert, so let's not waste too much time. But with the state of the Bills' defense and a lack of a running game, you're not going to beat the Chiefs to get to the Super Bowl. So they got Josh Allen, they got Diggs, they got some great players, but there are still holes to fill before they can be a legit Super Bowl contender.
Hey, listen, I appreciate that, but my biggest takeaway and the best part about that is that you and your son can share that. That's a great thing. We know this about fathers and sons in sports and passing that on, so I think that's really cool. Listen, thing is, tomorrow is the one-year anniversary of the passing of Kobe Bryant, and I want to get into your piece about Kobe and Zach Randolph in a moment, but overall, when you think about the passing of Kobe, what kind of thoughts come to mind?
I think I'm like everyone, and I know you had a relationship with him, and I think we're all fans, media, whatever, you know, it still is incomprehensible. It is just still impossible to believe. I've had this conversation with so many colleagues. We write these stories. I've lost count by now how many kind of retrospective, tribute, insidery kind of pieces, kind of telling various aspects of Kobe's story. And after writing them, it still just does not sink in. It just still does not seem possible. It's the saddest story I've ever covered in my 35 years doing this, and I have a feeling it's going to always be the saddest story that I ever covered. It's just not just for what Kobe meant to people within sports and beyond sports, but you know, there were three teenage girls on that helicopter, and just lives cut so tragically short. And I think what just sticks for me is Kobe was 17 when I met him. I was the Lakers beat writer for the LA Daily News, so he was 17 at the first press conference that I covered with him when he was introduced as a Laker, and you know, his daughter was with him, and you know, it's these are teenagers on that helicopter, Alyssa Altobelli, Peyton Chester, you know, they're teenagers too. And I just, that's the part that I can't let go of.
Right. Mark Stein is joining us. So, Mark, Zach Randolph moved to Southern California after he retired, and his daughter joined Team Mamba. What was Zach's impression of Kobe when they played in the league?
Yeah, you know, look, they were contemporaries. Randolph was drafted in 2001, so Kobe was in the league for 5 years by that point. But, you know, Zach worked his way to all-star status. They played in a couple all-star games together, so they were, you know, rivals, but it was really nothing more than a mutual respect of, you know, guys who cross paths a lot on the court. And, you know, I think people were aware after everything happened last January that Zach Randolph's daughter was on the team, on the team Kobe coached. But Zach and his daughter, they really haven't talked much about this, and you can understand it. I mean, the grief for everyone really involved in this, so close to it, just it must be unbearable, and there are a lot of stories about, I mean, this thing shattered five families. I mean, this crash, it's got to be impossible to talk about for the people whose families were directly involved. But I approached Zach recently to see if he would be willing to discuss it, because he just had this unique perspective going from an all-star competing against Kobe for years to now Kobe is coaching his daughter. They, you know, you never, I mean, Zach himself said it, never could have imagined that he and Kobe Bryant would form this coach-parent partnership. But Zach Randolph just speaks of, he says Kobe's the best to ever do it. He's not talking about the player. He's talking about the coach. He was that moved by how much Kobe put into coaching that team. And, you know, Kobe did. I mean, I think maybe the most telling line in the piece is, you know, Zach Randolph said, Kobe ran this like a real organization. That's how seriously he took it for these girls. And I mean, they practiced 5 days a week, and just all the strength training and beach workouts and all these things that Kobe brought to this group. And I mean, he was, I think we all know, I think we've seen enough footage. And I mean, this coaching his daughter and coaching that team meant so much to him.
We're talking to Mark Stein. Mark, there is a great quote in the piece when Randolph told you that Kobe, quote, loved my baby. He told me, I love her, man. When he told me that, I told him, we're brothers for life. End of quote. What does that say then about both men?
Yeah, you're right. That's the most powerful line in the story, probably. Just I don't think Zach Randolph was expecting that. Again, he knew Kobe Bryant from competing against him for years, but competing against somebody, it's a much different thing when, I mean, you know, all of us who have kids and they play sports, you know, that relationship with the coach, it's important. It's a big deal, because the kids are spending so much time on these traveling teams, and I think a lot of parents can just identify with you want to feel good about the coach that you're sending your kids to. And, you know, Zach Randolph felt more than good about it. I mean, he just, you know, Kobe told him, just, you watch how good she's going to be when I'm done working with her. And so, you know, it's the tragedy of this. It's all coming back for everyone now. It's going to be a very emotional week. You know, the 1 year anniversary is tomorrow, and I still just can't believe it.
It's a nearly impossible thing to get your head around, for sure. Mark Stein joining us, and I hate to keep belaboring it, but there's so many interesting aspects, and it's so sad. It is so sad, and it's all coming back again. But there's another relationship I do want to ask you about, and that's the one between Pau Gasol and Kobe's family, which to me really is fascinating. Now, it's not if you know anything about Pau, because he's such an amazing guy and a tremendous guy. But from what you've seen of that, what does that tell you about Pau as a person that maybe something you didn't even know?
Yeah, you know, my former colleague, Ramona Shelburne, she did a wonderful piece on Pau and just how hard he's tried to kind of be there for the family as much as you can. I mean, there's, you know, it can never be enough, but, you know, he's trying to provide as much support as possible. And just, I think it's interesting that, you know, as reporters, we so much covered what Powell could do for Kobe's championship window, but also Kobe, you know, kind of toughening Powell up to win a championship. But I found it very interesting that Powell, you know, spoke about in this piece trying to coach Kobe the other way, that, you know, it's okay to let your guard down and show love and let some of those vulnerabilities out. And, you know, Powell is probably the only one who could have done that because they, you know, won so much together, and it was, you know, such a game changer for Kobe after that trade and you know, having a player of that level join him again and giving him the chance to win two more championships. So, I mean, look, I think you've encountered Powell yourself. You know, I mean, there aren't many kinder people in sports or the world really than Powell. I mean, he just is an incredibly kind person, and they were a duo of opposites, but I think everybody sees now how close they really were.
No, I think you're right. Powell's a really different type. I mean, like a world-class athlete, but I mean, so kind and just such a good guy. And I know exactly what you're talking about. You know, Mark, let me just really quickly ask you, and there's not a convenient pivot here, but when you look at the Lakers really quickly, you look at LeBron and he's averaging 32.4 minutes per game, which would be the lowest of his career by quite a bit. They're tied with the Clippers for the best record in basketball. So how pleased do you think the Lakers are with their strategy and how it's working out so far? And then what's that say about their depth?
They're in a class by themselves. And that's, you know, in their journey, you know, last season there were so many, even after the Anthony Davis trade, there were so many doubts. Are they even the best team in L.A.? I mean, that was a legitimate discussion all season long. And the reality was, I think from the analyst chair, we all said the Clippers had the higher ceiling. The Clippers had more depth. The Clippers, had a more talented cast around their two stars. And, you know, there were so many questions about that Laker team. And now they conquered the bubble. And this season, yeah, there are a lot of new pieces that they're still finding their way, and you know, I don't think it's by any means seamless. But when you talk to people around the league, I think most teams, most rival front offices would paint it the same way for you. The Lakers are in a class by themselves, and everybody else is trying to get to that level. I mean, they are clear favorites, and they were not in year one of LeBron and Anthony Davis.
I agree with you. He covers the NBA for the New York Times. He is a Cal State Fullerton and a Big West Conference legend. Do not forget either of those things. He is the man behind the New York Times NBA newsletter. I want to reiterate, he won the 2019 Kurt Gowdy Media Award, or was a recipient thereof. He is Mark Stein. Mark, appreciate you very much, as always. Thanks for coming back.
Good to be with you, sir. Be good.
You too, Mark. Be good. Great talking to you. Always appreciate the conversation. We Big West guys all stay together. Cal State Fullerton, especially where I live in Orange County. Cal State Fullerton, because both of my kids played baseball. Jake did. Logan does. There's a lot of Cal State Fullerton grads around here. Like, normally it was easy to kind of clown. Like, Jay Stu was Cal State Fullerton. When I went to UC Santa Barbara, we thought that we were superior because we were a, quote, UC school, and they were a state school. However, when it comes to baseball, now, granted, I've got a baseball factory at UCSB with my guy Andrew Checkets running things, but Cal State Fullerton is a baseball empire. Cal State Omaha, Cal State Fullerton. There are plenty of former MLBers, former drafted players. Like, they're all over this area, coaching, teaching, specializing. So if you've got Cal State Fullerton and baseball on your resume, it's a good thing, especially in this area. All right, when we come back, I've got time for a wide open segment. Anything you want to hit on? Phone lines starting to pump back up, which I like. 1-800-636-8686. Coming up on the Jim Rome podcast on Wednesday, former NFLer Aqib Talib. And he made a huge splash when he made his Fox debut on TV. And of course, you remember Talib is a player, great player. Huge personality. So I'm looking forward to that. That's on Wednesday. Let's get that ATP in. The Ask the Pros, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. ATP. Sometimes I go rapid fire. Quickly, Jimmo's. Do you think Sapphire knows that you have a preference for Cody the Ragdoll? Brent in PC. I don't think. Sapphire cares about three things. Eating, sleeping, and getting with either Janet or I. That's literally all that cat cares about. He's fine. He's good. One of the reasons I like Cody the Ragdoll cat better than Sapphire. Yeah, I said it. Janet hates that. Like, it's like picking between your kids. No. No, I like Sapphire a lot. He's a cool cat.
Sapphire.
He's not Cody the Ragdoll cat. And one of the reasons I like Cody the Ragdoll cat better, he doesn't try to dry hump me. Fact. Facts. Hey, Rome, why don't you fix the cat? I have. We did. He's broken. Apparently, you can't fix him. We did. Jimmo's, do you prefer pens with blue or black ink? Black. Black, for sure. It matters to me, too. I never use blue pens. Jim. Hi, Jim. Pancakes or waffles? Bella B. in Calgary. Yes. Let's see. Here's a long form. Dear Rome, I'm starting to suspect that a lot of these, quote, great football organizations are no better than the crap organizations. Once you take away their GOAT quarterback, like, how well did that, quote, great organization New England do this year? Show me the list of great first-round draft picks that Bill Belichick has ever made. Similarly, I'm not sure that if you take away Aaron Rodgers, that Matt LaFleur isn't really Matt Nagy. Kicking a 25-yard field goal while down by 8 with 2 minutes left. I'm not sure the Packers GM isn't really just the Bears' Ryan Pace in disguise. Sending or trading up to draft a QB while his own QB is still MVPing out there. Maybe these, quote, great football organizations should be thankful that Tom Brady fell into their lap in the sixth round, or that Aaron Rodgers fell into their lap at the end of the first round. Otherwise, they might just be the Jets or the Lions. Victor! Look at Victor by Broadway. Quickly, hey, Rome. Buffalo bill collector is not the worst job. Yours, that lone female bartender on Bondo's boat. Signed, Chad in Orlando. Wore hey wacky. Romy. Hey, wacky. Regards, the police approaching Reese McGuire's car.
Went a little hey wacky today.
Denny in the 402. Hey, Dennis, I see what you did there. We all see what you did there, and none of us approve. Hey, wacky.
Want a little
sign
hey, wacky
the cops today. Approaching McGuire's car. What do you say we go to southeastern Wisco? I said, what's the vibe like in Wisconsin the day after the fact? We go to Chris. What's going on, Chris?
Hey, Jim. How you doing today, dude?
Good, dude. How about you?
I'm doing great. Hey, man, I just wanted to report live and on location. An eerie silence is wafting through the air here in southeastern Wisco. I've heard disturbing reports also coming from the Green Bay area that grown men are filling up corner bars and crying uncontrollably about how yet another NFC championship was, quote, stolen from them. What a joke. Same bleep, different year. The scoreboard never lies, Rome, yet the excuses are plentiful. It has become the norm for Packer fans. This year they want to blame it on Coach Matt LaField goal because he trusted his analytics chart more than his future Hall of Fame quarterback. Or my favorite excuse, the refs cheated. That third and four play at the end, Kevin King had a fuller fist of the receiver's jersey in his hands than Jeff in Richmond at the movies and a bag of popcorn. So dry your eyes, Packer fan guy. Grab your chewing tobacco, gas up your snowmobile, and go ice fishing. You'll feel better soon. Your season has officially been terminated. This isn't new territory for you dudes. Enjoy your NFC North Division Championship t-shirt for your collection. It's really cool. But remember, in the words of immortal coach Vince Lombardi, winning isn't everything. It's the only thing. Lastly, Jim, since I'm on the topic of fans in Titletown, this goes out to that jealous, wannabe tough guy, Jeremy in Green Bay. Twitter handle at PukeYellowWeasel. This extremely bitter and angry loser has been a watchlister longer than Brett Favre's consecutive game streak. Hey, Jeremy, you mad, bro? You keep referring to a twisted and weird theory that I cracked the Rome code to earn my golden ticket? You do realize you're insulting Jim by saying that, not me, you bust out. It's his smack-off contest, idiot. Ever since I showed up in Jim's words out of nowhere, I went on a prolific double-digit streak of rat calls, one that has never been seen before in the history of this show. Those are facts, man, whether you like it or not. Jealousy is a disease, my Badger brother. Get well soon. Now who's the bitch? Bitch. War Benny and Wisco for being a true leader and setting up a Zoom call with Caleb to provide him with some much-needed support after yesterday's devastating loss. We don't need that kid resorting to any more comfort food. It's a dynasty, clones!
You can go ahead and rack him again. He's right. I'm not sure that I've ever seen a guy come out of nowhere and then go on the run of racked calls that Chris in Southeastern Wisco has gone on. Double digits. He speaks the truth. 1-800-636-8686. Let's stay in the same state. The amazing state of Wisconsin, because I did ask the question the day after the fact. You thought it was there. It was all set up. It was all set up, and then it all comes crashing down. What is the vibe like? Murph in Wisco. Murph, how are you?
Yeah, this is Murph. Hey, Romy. The vibe in Wisconsin, and I won't get racked, and I got no shock value here, but I think when Aaron Rodgers on a Zoom call last night, when he said gut punch, I think that's how the whole state felt. But I think even more accurate probably is if you said it's akin to the stages of grief in Wisconsin right now, except we skip right by denial, and it's just 100% anger and blame right now through the media, through Twitter, through wherever, figuring out who's got to go, who's to blame, who we should be mad at. And probably 48 hours from now, we're going to get to that point of acceptance where it was a magical ride. LaFleur and Hackett were great. Rodgers was great. And we're going to get there, but we're 48 to 72 hours away. So that is the vibe.
No, I appreciate that, Murph. Nice job. Nice job. Of course, it's still raw. It's a gut punch. It's going to hurt. And you're looking to blame somebody. I mean, that's the way it always is. It's never a matter of we got beat by the better team. For instance, if you're Buffalo, you probably should look at it like that. We got beat by the better team. If you're Green Bay, though, and you were the one seed, and you were at home, and it was all set up like that, and you've got Aaron Rodgers at the peak of his powers, the MVP, soon to be MVP, you probably would have a hard time accepting that you got beat by the better team. And I'm the first guy to say scoreboard, look up at it. But if you look at the way they went down, and you look at some of the things that transpired, you look at the way that first half ended, you look at some of the decision-making by Matt LaFleur, you look at some of the drops, you look at some of the other issues, I could see where Green Bay Packer fan might think, we didn't get beat by the better team. We did as much to help them as they did to beat us. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but I see where Packer fan would have a lot of trouble dealing with that right about now. And if I were a Packer fan, I'd have some concerns about the play calling on both sides of the ball and another wasted opportunity. In fact, more than Packer fan, if I were Aaron Rodgers, I'd have some real concerns right now. What more could that guy do? He's been banging his head against a brick wall. What more could Aaron Rodgers possibly do than what he's done since he's been there, and especially what he did this year and what he did yesterday? Now, I've seen some of you on Twitter try and make the argument that, man, yeah, that guy had a bad game. No, he didn't. Aaron Rodgers had a great game. Rodgers threw for nearly 350 yards and three touchdowns and that one pick against a defense that was coming for him, a defense that sacked him five times, a defense that put 10 hits on him. This guy had a hell of a game. Believe me, he outplayed Brady. Not that it was him against him and that's your scoreboard, but don't tell me Aaron Rodgers had a bad game. Could Aaron Rodgers have run for it on third down? Maybe so. But again, Rodgers would tell you he thought he was in two down territory. And he wasn't. Hey, Rome, I really appreciate Chris and Southeastern Wisco's deliberate, methodical delivery. Get there on your terms at your own pace. That's always been my motto. Good things come to those who wait, War Chris. Regards, the Crazy Horse Monument. Yeah, you know, that thing's been under construction for a while, right? Since like the 40s? The 1840s? Huge call today. Brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. We're close, we're convenient, we're known for our guaranteed everyday low prices and excellent customer service. From the professional parts people that you know you can trust, stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. My thanks to Mark Stein, Kevin Ioli, Therese Paler, the XR4TI crew. You have yourself a great day. See you tomorrow. We're out.